Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the EG Property Podcast with me as your host, EG Editor Sam McClary. On today's episode, we're talking about all things net zero carbon, but with a particular look at what the journey to net zero looks like if you're not a big listed company that already has your pathway in place. Over the next 40 minutes or so, we'll hear from Andrew Leeper, net zero carbon leader and principal engineer at Max Fordham, which has just this week released its own guide to becoming net zero. Head to its website, maxfordham.com, to find out more about that. We also hear from Louise Ellison, Head of Sustainability at Hammerson and Chair of the Better Buildings Partnership, who brings us insight from a firm that has been on the net zero journey for more than a decade. And Stephen Barrett joins us. Stephen is CEO of SME developer Whole Homes. He's embarking on his first net zero carbon project, but has a passion for the planet and is intent on reducing waste. It is a conversation that spans everything from carrots and sticks, collaboration, costs, business imperatives, and just how likely we are to solve the climate change problem. It sounds like a pretty great listen to me, but I would say that, wouldn't I? You better keep listening and find out for yourself. Louise, Andrew, Stephen, thanks for joining us today. Let's start with you, Andrew. Max Fordham has just published your guide to net zero. That's a guide to help people on their journey to net zero. Can you tell us a little bit about why you've published that and how some of the smaller businesses in real estate can use it to go forward?
Yeah, so we're a building services consultancy and have a long history in low carbon and low energy design. So last year, when the declarations about climate emergency were made, we signed a building services engineers declare. And as one of our pledges, we pledged to the open source sharing of information. So we've been working on developing the net zero carbon as a service, and enlightening our own engineers in house about the new slightly different language that you might want to use compared to traditional low energy design. And we thought that we should develop this website as a sort of high level, easily accessed guide to the building and construction industry. So for our collaborators who know a bit about net zero, I've heard it talked about, but don't necessarily understand in great depth about what it might mean and what it might involve. So we've tried to cover a lot of the different aspects of net zero carbon design in that, and hopefully they can find that quite accessible and as a good starting point to going out and finding more information.
Fantastic, thank you. And Louise, Hammerson's obviously been on this journey for a long time. I would place Hammerson in the big guys basket, but you obviously deal with a lot of smaller businesses in terms of your occupiers and people we meet in this industry. Mm. What would you say for you have been the biggest learnings that you pass on either to down your supply chain, or you would hand over to someone like Stephen who will turn to next?
I think the most important thing is not to look at the whole elephant all at once, because net zero carbon feels like an enormous challenge. So you have to tackle the bits that you can tackle and that are relevant for your business. Even for a business like Hammerson, and as you say, we've been working on this for a long time, and we're very together in terms of our understanding of sustainability and carbon emissions across our assets. But we could tackle all sorts of things that aren't necessarily relevant for our business. So take it back to what it is that you do and what is really what's going to enable you to make a real difference. And you should be able to work out relatively easily what your own emissions are, and then where your vulnerabilities are from a business point of view from your clients. So how are you making money? And if you are making money out of something that is hugely intensive in terms of carbon, that might be a risk for you, and you need to start understanding that. So yeah, starting with your own footprint and then looking at where your earnings are coming from, and is that going to be vulnerable to climate change and vulnerable to net zero? how are you going to operate in a net zero carbon economy? That's the question you need to be asking yourself. You don't need to do what we do. You just need to do what's really right for you as a business.
Thanks, Louise. And that can be quite a overwhelming question to ask yourself, can't it? And Stephen, I'd love to hear from you what you think when you think about delivering for the planet and delivering net zero carbon. I know you're working on your first development at the moment, aren't you?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I'd agree with what's been said before. When you look at the whole picture, it can be a little bit overwhelming because, you know, tackling or trying to reach a net zero position is difficult, and there's so many factors to it. But I think if we brought it down to an individual level, if we start thinking of it as individuals and start to change behaviours, that will then impact businesses. Which is, you know, if it's just a company, or if we look at it from a corporate level, you may not have the right culture of all the individuals that have the same values that the corporate culture is trying to, you know, remodel. So it's looking at everybody from an individual level. Do they share those values? Do they live by those lifestyles? And, you know, having everybody focus towards that, I think, helps accelerate that goal.
And is that an easier or more difficult task in a smaller business? I wonder, for at Hammerson, for example, do you have to make sure that filtrates through absolutely everyone in the business, and that, you know, that's quite a lot of people? Or if you're a small business, is it easier?
It can be easier. I think the first question, or the first sort of decision you need to make corporately, is kind of that you are going to deliver this, you are going to deal with this. I mean, Hammerson made a decision about sustainability before I joined. I mean, I've been there over 7 years, and it was way before I got there. Hammerson made a decision that sustainability was important to the business and was going to have an impact on its assets. Didn't know exactly what that was going to be, but knew we needed to deal with it. So there will be people, and I always say there's probably climate deniers within the workforce at Hammerson. Doesn't really matter, because the business has made a decision about dealing with this, so therefore it deals with it. From a day-to-day basis, in terms of those processes, yes, it can be a little bit more tricky because we've got layers of management. If you're a small and you're fleet of foot, we are relatively more fleet of foot than some of the bigger companies that are out there. If you're talking about a business with, you know, thousands of people across the globe, that's hard. So yes, from an SME perspective, you should be able to drive that through your teams relatively quickly. And if you have a really clear set agenda, you know the business has made a decision, this is what it's doing, this is the strategy that we're delivering, people will get behind it. They want to.
Thanks. And Andrew, as a SME, you said you're on the sort of barrier there of classing yourself as an SME. Is that something that you'd agree with, and also in terms of clients that you work with?
Well, it's interesting. Max Fordham's an interesting case because there's a lot of partners at Max Fordham, so we're quite a cooperatively owned practice. So actually, decisions are made across a lot of people, and I do think, you know, right at this outset of this, we did get buy-in from all the partners to make the move towards, you know, being net zero carbon from respect of our buildings, and also to push and develop this aspect of our work as well. So I think everyone's fully bought in, and from a corporate perspective, it's also the way forward for the company's perspective. I don't know if there are any climate deniers in Max Fordham. I'd be very surprised if I did find any. We'll have to root them out. But maybe there are. And obviously, it's difficult when you talk about people's personal, footprints at home and how they live their lives and how many holidays they take a year to New Zealand, for example. You know, it's there's a line between work and personal lives. But I think the more people are committed and, you know, recognize that climate change is a risk to themselves personally, their own lives, and they understand the issues, and I think that's that side of things will come, and it will grow. And, you know, as you know, if we're in construction industry, then the products that we are selling people in terms of the houses or the buildings that they're renting, then, you know, the demand for net zero carbon and low carbon buildings will increase as well.
Let's talk about demand as well, and where the sort of pressure for net zero comes from. Because I know we're seeing in the listed companies, there's a huge pressure from shareholders now to be sustainable. Obviously, customers are asking for in the office world anyway, they want premises that are net zero. In an SME environment, Stephen, who's pressuring you to deliver on net zero?
Well, I guess, you know, as a family, we live by those values. So, I mean, we're quite an environmentally conscious family to start with. So I suppose you could say we pressurize ourselves, to be honest. I mean, we're a lot more aware now, you know, on a society level of what's around us. You know, we see documentaries of plastics in the ocean. We see documentaries of, you know, various industries that are quite wasteful still. You know, from the, you know, the 60s and 70s, we've been very sort of aware that our industrious efforts are environmentally damaging. But, you know, from those times, sort of 40, 50 years ago, there hasn't been enough change. Obviously, there has been quite a lot of change, but I don't feel that there's been enough change to actually change some of our industries and the waste that is produced. Because, I mean, if you actually take inspiration from nature, nature doesn't produce any waste. Everything is utilized. It's full circle within nature. But, you know, waste in our society, in the human society, is a human construct waste. We think very linear. We don't think in a circular way, the way that nature does. So I think that we could draw a lot more inspiration from nature. And that's what we try to do as a family. You know, we compost everything, all of our vegetable waste. You know, we do as much as we can on a very individual level. And we try to bring that into our business, into whole homes. And, you know, we really, really think about the design of it and try to think in a fully circular way about, you know, what are we designing into this? Can it be repurposed or reused or repaired? Can, you know, furniture that we're bringing into properties, can it be dismantled or can it be fixed? You know, we try to sort of stay away from products that have this designed obsolescence philosophy built in. And that's kind of like the systemic root of, you know, some, not all of the problems, to be honest.
So that's a very...
So we try to think about it, you know, how would nature solve these problems and take inspiration from that, really.
Sure. So that's a very sort of personal involvement with your own net zero journey. And I wonder, you know, now's probably a good time to have a look at how we as an industry are faring on that journey. A lot of people have set themselves a 2030 goal. The country goal is 2050. That isn't actually that far away, is it? So how are we as an industry faring, and how important is it, or vital is it, that for us to get to that level, that we involve absolutely everyone and we have those small businesses that have that personal view on sustainability, and we have the bigger players in the world who are led by, you know, there is a very serious investment case here as well. Louise?
In terms of the journey, I think as an industry, well, it's kind of hard because I end up by definition talking to the converted, if you like, to some degree. So yeah, I would say that the industry is doing reasonably well. We've certainly got a way to go. I mean, as chair of the Better Buildings Partnership, you know, I'm there's kind of 35 business or 30 business or whatever who are members of the Better Buildings Partnership who are all completely committed to this, and there's a number of them who will be publishing our transition pathways to net zero this year and are really taking this seriously and doing a lot of work and wanting also to really share that with the rest of the sector to really sort of drag the kind of boat along, if you like, and make sure that we are being able to deliver stuff. So I think there is a good sort of start, if you like. Generally speaking, I would say we haven't moved fast enough. You know, there was a lot of people at the beginning of this year very kind of pleased that we'd sort of seen that actually there was a more policy coming through saying net zero carbon is where we need to be and bringing the targets forward. But there was an awful lot of the sustainability community who were really quite depressed about the fact that we've been banging this drum for a long time and it's going to be so much more expensive now. So we haven't moved fast enough and we need to move faster. And yes, we absolutely need to have everybody involved in this. I would say immediately everybody needs to become a member of the Better Buildings Partnership, obviously. But that element of sharing information, and of really making sure that there is data out there in the market, and that we are cooperating with each other to move this forward is really critical. And the things that are driving it is kind of a fundamentally business risk. You know, I mean, you can do this from a personal point of view, but you at the end of the day, to make it stick, it has to be something that you have to do, because otherwise you don't have a business. And that's the critical reason. That's what we're looking at now. And yes, we do need to do this by, you know, 2050 is the UK's net zero carbon targets. But if we haven't got there, and if our sector hasn't done probably more than its fair share of delivering against those targets, then we're going to have a much bigger problem in the value of our assets in the second half of this century, and that's quite scary.
That is quite scary. Andrew, do you concur with that? And anything to add?
Yeah, I was going to say, I think from how the industry is faring perspective, I think this year's, I felt like the momentum has slowed a bit for obvious reasons because of the distraction with the pandemic. But I think the conversations are being re-engaged with and picked up now at this point in the year. And possibly there's a small glimmer of hope that 2021 will become be a better place to be. I think that we are getting lots of inquiries about net zero carbon, and net zero carbon is appearing in people's briefs, which is really positive. So people are starting to think about this and embed it at the start in a project, which hopefully then filters through to the actual delivery. But I think, and you mentioned also, Sam, about an SME, what are the sort of advantages perhaps? And I think being a smaller company makes you closer to the center of control, I guess. So your sphere of influence is perhaps smaller, but potentially it's easier to get to overcome an inertia and affect control or change over your area of influence.
I think that was interesting that you had a view that the sort of the involvement or the push towards net zero had slowed during the pandemic, because I wonder if that it's sort of momentarily paused as we thought about the importance of it more, because I know sort of the conversations that I have, it seems to, I being a cynical journalist, of course, I would think as soon as we start tightening the purse strings, ESG sustainability goes down the list, but it continues to be a very hot topic of conversation and somewhere where people want to learn more and do more. So I wonder actually if the pandemic and our view on life and the understanding that, you know, we have caused this problem is enabling us to perhaps now speed up towards net zero carbon.
I think that's probably true. I think it's taught us that, you know, it's pushed on remote working. You know, we're sitting here doing this interview sort of without anybody traveling to meeting. And I know that's not necessarily going to be the answer, you know, entirely the answer going forward. There will be some return to face-to-face contact, but certainly that's been a big move and a big shift in terms of the way people work. And maybe some of the aspects of the pandemic that you know, there's better sharing of information. I feel more connected to a lot more people than I did before. Maybe that will be something that teaches us and we can take forward and put into our new way of working.
Do you think, Andrew, that your perception, that your kind of sense that there's been a bit of a slow is just it's been hard for us to get projects moving?
I think there's that, but also it's like
to do it, but
I think there is a bit of that. There's, you know, we've probably bid on a lot more work than we have done this time last year. So actually there's been loads of inquiries, but, you know, people are very slow to make decisions. People have been holding off making decisions. So that's definitely one impact. I think in terms of, you know, things like Architects Declare, that kind of all the climate declarations that happened in 2019 had kind of gone quiet. And, you know, those conversations are restarting now. So maybe that's my perception of it, that the conversations on that side of things have slowed, and I think people's attention have maybe been elsewhere within the industry. I don't know how it's felt within individual companies. I feel like we've been talking more about it than ever, but maybe not having that sort of outward conversation as much.
It's interesting, isn't it? I mean, because where we're doing design work, we have pushed, and particularly in Dublin, we've pushed the design team quite hard in terms of what we're expecting. And they've responded really very positively. Whereas if I'd been setting those standards and setting those things goals kind of 18 months, 2 years ago, they would have been looking very darkly at me. There's a real kind of like, no, if you're really serious about this, yeah, we can come up with some solutions and some ideas. I think the LETI targets have really helped to kind of clarify some of the thinking around it, whether or not they're the kind of ultimate goal. The London Energy Transition Initiative targets have been really useful in just setting that kind of benchmark in some of those debates, and that's been interesting. But yeah, I get that sense that people are excited about it and wanting to do stuff and feeling that there's more information available and more options. I don't know, Andrew, if that's your sense of it.
I think within design teams and the professional designers, I think definitely that is the case. People feel empowered and to talk about it. They feel that they know how to go about doing this. I think the clarity is it's a lot clearer now this year than it certainly was maybe last summer in terms of, you know, the UK Green Building Council's, the framework definition of net zero carbon really clarified and sharpened up that for everyone, I think, which helped. And obviously you mentioned LETI as well, and that's been really useful because we've actually started seeing very similar, you know, energy use of intensities, you know, the amount of energy per meter squared per year that buildings use appearing in briefs as targets now. So, you know, there's something there to hang your hat on as a designer and aim. Before that, we had, a number of clients asking for, you know, contractual commitments to like DECA. After 2 years or after 5 years in projects. So that was the sort of commitments before. And perhaps we'll see more of that as well, you know, commitments to contractual commitments to deliver low energy in use.
Can we talk a bit about policy and commitments and targets and that sort of thing, and whether they are being applied to the right people, I suppose, and how we can make sure that, again, it's bringing everyone on the journey. If there is more policy and perhaps it is becoming more expensive, is that something that will turn people away from the journey, or is there a method out there that can bring absolutely everyone along, whether you are a individual investor in real estate or a self-builder or something, or whether you are a big FTSE listed developer. Stephen, how does policy affect what you're doing? Do you pay attention to it, or do you sort of crack on
policy? Policy's always very slow to make changes. And when they do make changes, it can always be quite impactful on both sides of the fence. It's always felt, you know, there's either companies that are able to take advantage of the changes, and there's other companies that are, their businesses are damaged by the changes. So, policy change is historically quite slow, unless it's, you know, a pandemic situation, which, you know, happens overnight when we have different legislation changes, which are enacted very quickly. But yeah, I think if there was a little bit more of a carrot and a stick approach, so there were more incentives for developers or SME businesses that were involved in doing things that are beneficial for people and the planet, rather than just penalties and fines. And so I think a carrot and stick approach, I think, would incentivize businesses to do the right thing a bit more.
Fantastic, thank you. And Louise, with your BBP hat on and the type of membership that you have and the work that you're doing, is there scope there for businesses like Stephen who might be struggling with some of that policy, only getting the stick? Are there ways that they can sort of be part of the family and utilise that strength?
Oh. Gosh, yes. I mean, there's all sorts of information and things that are available, and you know, BBP is an organisation for property owners and landlords, so it's certainly not restricted to the larger corporates. But the information that we have is freely available on the website for anybody. So I think it's important to try and be part of that conversation. I think one of the things around policy is a direction of travel. And I think for businesses like Stephen's, it's knowing where they need to get to over a period of time. So if you've got a very clear direction of travel that everybody's going to be operating in this way, and this is where you need to get to, then you can make sure that your business is able to deliver against that. It's where you get, you don't actually know if the policy is going to stick or if it's going to be put in and it's going to be repealed, and you know, that just, we can't be doing with that. And I think there does seem to be more clarity and more around the direction of travel on around carbon emissions policies now. There is, particularly with the residential, it tends to be a little bit schizophrenic in terms of what is being expected. But yeah, I think there is some greater clarity, and I think we'll probably see more of that coming through. One of the things that I think drives it is also we are going to have a huge amount of public sector investment in order to kickstart the economies. And I would anticipate there being a lot of green and sustainability strings attached to that investment. So there will be an expectation that whatever money is being spent in a way that supports the transition to a clean economy. So, yeah, policy is really important, but you do need that clarity of path and some timing as to some clarity around the timing of when things are going to happen. It's a journey. But yeah, in terms of BBP, absolutely, there's lots of material there, and the members are very happy to talk to other businesses about what's going on.
And do you think, is it time for government to support the whole of the real estate industry on this journey, as well as putting in place the demands on this industry, which is, as we all know, a big contributor to climate change? Should they be helping it along too? Should there be incentives for big and small businesses along the way to really deliver if we are going to complete this journey to net zero? Andrew, any thoughts from you?
I'm trying to think of carrots, but they're mainly sticks that are coming to mind. You know, I heard the announcement recently about carbon reporting, which is going to be more widely enforced in 2025. Last month, the Chancellor was talking about carbon taxes. And I think a big thing from my perspective is the sort of electrification of heat and moving away from fossil fuels and natural gas. And natural gas is so cheap just now to buy. It's very, the unit price is really cheap. The equipment that you put in is really cheap. So there has to be the RHI scheme for the renewable heat incentive for non-commercial buildings is just about to run out. So there needs to be some incentive to move away from natural gas and move into say heat pumps and start putting those into buildings, because until we stop burning fossil fuels, there's not really as an industry we can be very energy efficient, but really we just need to stop burning gas and in our vehicles and stop burning diesel and petrol.
Yeah, I mean, I think that transition to all electric buildings is a really critical one. I mean, I don't think that's necessarily being flagged clearly enough, because if you're building now and you're putting gas in, at some point in the next 15 years, you're going to have to take it out again. You're going to have to get to a building that's all electric, and you need to know that now as a developer. All developers need to know that now, that they need to future with these buildings to be all electric, even if they don't want them to be now. That's got to be enabled to happen.
There's a cost related to all of this, isn't there? And the question that pops into my head is, do you need a decent sized balance sheet to be able to go on this journey?
Well, I think you need a decent sized balance sheet and a lot of guts to be able to do any property development. Let's face it. It's not for the timid. So buildings are expensive to build. Build them properly.
And they'll last.
Yeah, exactly. There's nothing more expensive than building them wrong.
Absolutely. So I want to think about maybe just a couple of tips from everyone. If a listener is listening to this, they haven't got very far on their journey to net zero, they don't know where to start. They may have a portfolio of a couple of buildings. They may have a portfolio of hundreds of buildings. But if they want to start from scratch, what are some of the first things that they should be doing to sort of get their ducks in a row, I suppose? Stephen, I'm going to go to you first and just think of, and get a view from you. If you were talking to one of your fellow SMEs and they said, how have you done it? What would you say to them?
Well, if you're talking about owners of existing buildings, because I mean, we're new builders, so we'd be looking to build things from the ground up. So we would already have a budget in mind for what we're looking to build. But if people already have a portfolio of properties and they're looking to maybe improve the energy efficiency of those buildings, they need to know what their budget is, like you said earlier. We'd need to sort of consider the balance sheet of how that's going to be paid for, whether they've got the funds for it, whether there's even, as Andrew mentioned earlier, I couldn't think of any carrots. I was thinking of maybe possible government grants or tax incentives, maybe easier public funds that are more accessible for SME developers. You know, there could be all manner of ways to actually help us achieve the goal. But I suppose it starts with speaking to the professionals, you know, speaking to people that know their industries inside out and getting good advice about what, you know, how they can improve the energy efficiencies of their portfolios or their developments, whichever, you know, sector that they're in, and collaborating with people on an open source basis and leveraging everybody's knowledge and experience for, the better good of everybody, really.
And do you feel that the industry is open enough and collaborative enough on this? Can you go and talk to anyone and find out what you need to know?
I think the industry on a whole could be more collaborative. I think it's definitely improving. I think on an individual level for us, we collaborate with our suppliers and our supply chain and manufacturers on a daily basis, just looking at what they do, always looking at new, more innovative suppliers. Some of the smaller suppliers are coming out with some amazing new sustainable technologies, you know, reusing woods to make kitchen surfaces and different types of bio resins and all sorts of products that we want to actually put into our developments. But for a smaller company like us, it's for us to try all these products. You know, if we're doing, you know, a 10 or 20 unit scheme, we can test out these things on a much smaller scale than bigger companies like Berkeley Group or Haverson that may be, delivering many hundreds of units and may be committed to, you know, a supply chain of different products and different suppliers. It might not be as easy for them to change and trial things. It's a difficult thing to change, and it's slow, and I think for bigger companies, it's a bit slower than for smaller companies like us. But, you know, as long as the momentum of travel is going in the right direction, I think, you know, it can only be for good.
Absolutely. And I started this conversation asking what the little guy could learn from the big guy, but perhaps it's the other way other way around as well. You know, should we be looking to those smaller, nimble companies that are, you know, maybe led, I'm going to say, more by the heart than some of the bigger companies, or what perceptions that we have of bigger companies? Is there stuff we can learn from SMEs, Louise?
Oh, for sure, absolutely, and it's absolutely right what Stephen was saying, and Andrew said earlier about for the smaller businesses, the centre of gravity around decision making is nearer to the coalface, if you like. So, I think there's a lot of opportunity for you to do exactly that, and testing some of those projects and bringing some of those innovations from those small designers forward, and then enabling us to use them. And I think as an industry, we could do much more in terms of working across different kind of different businesses and different groups. I think there's a lot more that we could do, and we can certainly learn from those businesses and just reap the rewards of some of those innovations, exactly as Stephen has been talking about. I mean, I think in terms of your question about what should they do, you know, for businesses hasn't started on this journey, I think understanding what the impacts of your portfolio are is the first point you need to address. You need to have the data on your portfolio, and I think there are a lot of kind of sustainability consultancies, good real estate specific consultancies out there who will be able to help you get your head around a fairly kind of straightforward strategy to start on this journey. And I would start, I would urge people to ask for some help, because it's perfectly doable.
I like that. Ask for some help. Mm. Let's open source everything that we test, so we can share and do better. And a third one, I don't know. Andrew, have you got a third one for us?
Oh, just follow on from Louise's assessment of the impacts would be to put a plan in place to reduce the impact. So start to think, you know, there probably is lots of low-hanging fruit in most people's, you know, buildings, or, you know, if they're looking at it from a company perspective, then from their company's various impacts. So maybe tackling those might be useful. But, you know, in terms of improving buildings, then, you know, looking at it holistically, we'll make sure that all the various improvements that you make can be planned and can be performed in the right sequence to make sure you get the best result at the end of that process.
One of the things that always comes up is that sort of sense that people say, oh, well, I would do, but I don't have control of the assets. It's an FRI lease and it's just down to the tenant and I can't get any access. So this isn't a good enough excuse anymore. You need to have a conversation with your tenant about what's going on in the building, if it's commercial particularly, and find a way of resolving that between you, because we can't just be responsible for the 10% or 15% of carbon emissions that are coming out of the common parts, or less than that in terms of some portfolios. We have to address all of the carbon emissions that are coming from the assets which we're making money from.
Absolutely. No more excuses.
Get your scope threes in order.
No more excuses. Get everything in order. Make a plan. Ask for help. Open source it. And then
work collaboratively,
and then we might just make it in time for 2015.
Yeah, then you can have a break for Christmas.
Problem solved by Christmas. Yeah.
I think what Andrew said earlier as well about thinking about things holistically as well, because it's not just an environment thing as well. It's also about a human well-being. There's human well-being aspects about this as well. It's thinking about, you know, how the buildings and built environments affect people, because that, you know, that also has a positive or negative impact on how we work and how we interact, and that can feed down to our, you know, our environmental philosophies about things as well.
Yeah, this isn't just about net zero, is it? This is about about people, the planet, and some profit as well, somewhere down the line, eventually.
Yeah.
Well, if you don't do it, there's not going to be any profit, that's for sure.
Exactly.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us today. Let's leave it there. I think there's so much more we can talk about. I know we will. There will be more of these conversations going forward. But for now, Andrew, Louise and Stephen, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the EG Property Podcast. We hope you found the content insightful and helpful. If you'd like more of the same and to keep up with all the latest news, views, analysis and research that the EG Group has to provide, be sure to sign up to all of our property podcasts and subscribe to Radius Data Exchange for unlimited access to all of our content and comprehensive commercial real estate data.